Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 28, Torn Between Two Worlds, Story and Conversation with Erica O'Reilly. Before we dive into this week's episode, I wanted to be sure that you knew that the Writer's Knot is now open for registration. In our global creative community, this is the place where the mythic imagination meets the writer's craft, meets devoted community. Writers from around the world gather together each week. I guide the group with a new set of prompts every time we get together. This time around, as we travel together from September to the very start of January, you'll be invited to encounter a series of mythic landscapes that promise to help open your own connection to your imaginal creative source, give you new ways of seeing your own life, and promise to offer you new ways to relate to the world around you. As I said, registration is now open. We begin together the second week of September. We'll be meeting on Wednesdays as well as on Fridays. I'm offering this second group because interest has been so strong this time around. So if you're called to join us, I invite you to act now. The link for registration is in the show notes, and you can find everything you need at my website, marisagowdy.com. I am so excited to welcome Erica back to the show. If you're a Knot Work listener, you know Erica. She is our 2025 resident storyteller. And she comes to us with a brand new story just created during her time in Ireland. A little bit more about Erica before we dive in. She is the creative visionary behind Into the Circle Theater. She's also the keeper of a gorgeous Substack newsletter called Weavings of the Wise and Embodied. And the story she's about to read to you actually was first presented in her Substack back at the end of July. It's called The Calling of the Sea and a Lost Sealskin. I offer you this episode as a continuation of the conversation we began last week when I told you my story of my Imrav, my journey to Ireland with its 17 arrivals. This particular story, you'll really feel the poignancy of the departure and the having to say farewell. This conversation is for all of those in the diaspora who yearn for the sacred homeland. It's for all of us who have found it difficult to make transitions from one place of magic back to the mundane, and those of us who are seeking that magic within our everyday lives. As is our way on the podcast, first we'll start with the story, and then we'll chat about all the ways that it resonates in this modern moment.
If a woman emerged from the sea, offering my long-lost silk sealskin to me, I don't know what my answer would be. I've always been a soul who feels most at peace at the ocean's edge. And over the years, I've been gifted many opportunities to be held within the wise and wild embrace of the Atlantic. From Giant's Causeway to Galway Bay, to the shorelines of Castle Cove, held in the rolling hills of Kerry. I found her presence in the stillness of PEI's inlets and her whispers in the heart of me by the light of Peggy's Cove. She calls to me, the ruffled tulle of her seafoamed hem, her treasure troves of storied glass, and the secrets held in her limpet shells. Adorned in turquoise tones, no painter truly knows, for her beauty is only fully found in the stolen presence of your breath, standing in rapture of her. It's grief that comes to me. There's peace in her company. For something of me feels amidst the mist of her shrouded mystery. It's her salt-soaked shawl that tends to my tears. Perhaps one day these lost soul parts may be found amongst her waves, found floating in the haunted realms, between the lands of where I'm from and where I currently dwell. Here I am home. Every inch of my cellular being relaxes. I have endless space in my chest for breath. And gazing out into her vastness, I could surrender into the sacred meeting place of water and stone for hours. I have a cousin who knows and has regularly witnessed this energetic shift with me. Nearly every time I visit her home in Nova Scotia, we've made the drive to Peggy's Cove. One time, it was her and I, alongside two of our other cousins, making the long winding trip to my favorite East Coast fishing village. Brightly painted homes and a breathtaking lighthouse attract many tourists to the area. But for me, it's always been the sea. For well over a decade, this particular place among her stones has always felt hallowed to me, long before my feet would ever touch Ireland's shores. When we finally arrived, after the 2.5-hour drive, one cousin was leaning out the passenger seat with motion sickness, the other was tending to her 10-month-old son, and the Nova Scotian at heart just giggled to herself as I immediately disappeared from view. She heard, "Is Erica okay? She took off on her own." To which she replied with a smile, "Yep, she's fine. She does this every time. We'll find her later, likely sitting on her own by the stones." And sure enough, that's exactly where I was, gazing out into the wild Atlantic waves. I feel freedom here. I feel peace here. I feel ease here. At the water's edge, sitting on Irish ocean stones, I feel more at the heart of myself here than I do back home. When my 2-week artistic residency came to a close, I knew it wasn't going to be easy to leave the kingdom of Kerry. But I hadn't anticipated the amount of grief I would feel with the thought of leaving Ireland's shores once more. On my final night, while the other artists were at dinner, I quietly made my way down to the shoreline. And for over 90 minutes, I cried. I wept for what I was conscious to. I wept for this part of the journey that was coming to an end. I wept for leaving the ocean's edge. I wept for the tension that slowly replaced the ease that had nestled softly in my chest. I wept for the creeping demands of modernity that threatened to steal my rolling hours of creativity. And I wept for what resided unconscious from my view. I wept for what yearned in my spirit. I wept for the deep-seated remembrance of leaving home that permeated my bones. As I sat at the edge of the Atlantic, I cried and I prayed and I cried. Please, don't make me go. And then, a vision landed swiftly upon my otherworldly eye. If a woman emerged from the sea, offering my long-lost silk sealskin to me, I don't know what my answer would be. For weeks, seals adorned the corners of the estate property that I had come to call my home. From the moment I arrived, I could feel a silky story swimming within my creative ethers, but she needed more time, as the story hadn't quite breached the surface the shorelines of my mind. Then, in these final moments with rural Ireland, I had a vision of a woman emerging from the waters before me, holding my long-lost silk sealskin as an offering, inviting me to go with her to remember the freedom, the peace, the ease known to me in the rolling wild waters where Ireland and the Atlantic meet. And then the tears poured even more. Because in such a heightened way, I was torn between two worlds, between the home of my bones and the life I was building. And that life, created alongside my beloved, was not here in Ireland. If a woman emerged from the sea, offering my long-lost silk sealskin to me, I don't know what my answer would be. For what would come of my beloved who has a part of my heart on the other side of the sea? In Irish folklore, an Mhaoibh an Uaire is known as half-woman, half-fish. Selkies are often known as otherworldly women with the power to shapeshift between their seal and human forms. Oftentimes, the stories go that a man becomes so enthralled with the beauty of her that he captures a selkie by stealing her seal skin. Only when she is able to retrieve this lost part of herself does she reclaim her otherworldly essence and her ability to return to her home in the sea. And yet sometimes, in the span of the in-between while living on land, the woman gifts the man a family. And the return to her true form then comes with a heartbreaking choice, being that she is of two worlds. Over 2 weeks ago, I returned to my Ottawa home. Yet I still find myself whirling in the confusing tide pools of diasporic grief. The rural western coast of Ireland feels like home, but not in the idyllic "I feel so at home" sense that can come with vacation mode. No, this feeling of home is a rootedness in my bones. My bones know the land. My spirit knows her waters. Even though my closest ancestral ties are 3 and 4 generations back, County Kerry in fact, I grieve every time I leave Ireland, as though I know what's coming. A felt sense that I've navigated this before. My body braces for impact, and my spirit begs not to be pulled away, as the generational imprint cascades through the threads of time. This time around, the longing to stay in Ireland was strong. And yet, I am of two worlds. The other is one where my incredible partner and our 3 feline companions are found, all of whom I adore, and I knew were waiting my return to Canadian shores. So I chose to leave Ireland. And oceans of grief became my beloved companion once more, reminding me of the land, the language, the stories, and the songs that are so preciously a part of me. With this return to Turtle Island, I come with even more of an embodied understanding of diasporic grief and the resonance of what it means to be a guest on these lands. Over these past several weeks, I've learned that there are Selkie elements to my Irish spirit. And it makes sense, as many times throughout my life I felt out of place, like I don't belong, fish out of water, with the sense that what I am seeking rests just beyond the watery veil of the Atlantic, and the haunting grief that comes with that knowing that home is just barely out of reach. For me, the Selkie story that swims within my veins invites me to move beyond the traditional tale. It feels deeply woven within the pulse of Te Hir Mo Éireacha, calling me to consider how diasporic grief may be likened to the loss of a vital soul part, one that may possibly reside on distant shores. So I find myself posing these questions to the spirit of the stories. What if the loss of the sealskin relates to the severed connection from Irish ancestral homelands? What if the loss of the sealskin relates to the severed connection to Angilga? And if this could be so, if we're without our sealskin, are we destined to be tethered to a place that will never feel like home?
Erica, thank you so much for taking us to the shores of Kerry and to Nova Scotia and to the shoals inside of your heart. It speaks so directly to mine for so many reasons. And I'm excited to welcome you back. You are a storyteller in residence. It's been a little while since you've been here. And I'm just thrilled that the thing that gets us together is that we went to Ireland together separately in the month of July.
Exactly.
And we're having this opportunity to kind of compare trips that had such different personalities, different features to them, but also the sense that I know for me, the big focus was what it meant to arrive there. And that's what I've really been writing about. It's on my episode last week. And you're coming to us with this idea of what it meant to have to depart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in order to open up our conversation, I would love to bring our listeners back to the very beginning and those three soul-stirring lines. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can start with those and start our conversation and our journey from there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If a woman emerged from the sea, offering my long-lost silk sealskin to me, I don't know what my answer would be.
And there's the question, right? Mm-hmm. For any of us who are torn between the worlds, as you say in the piece, mm-hmm. that's the question.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to kind of get teary with you about it and laugh about it and wander around about it and not have an answer potentially at the end of our time.
Yep.
Because it's the question we live.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Through so many days.
Yep.
So you've been home for about 3 weeks or so.
Yes.
What's most real for you in this moment?
I would say what feels most real is the dance with grief. Mm. And grief comes in so many different forms. Mm. In this particular moment, it's connected to diasporic grief. And that feeling of being of two worlds. So having, or even still being in the process of landing back mm-hmm. at my Ottawa home, while the grief doesn't feel, the diasporic grief, the longing or the heartbreaking decision to leave Ireland mm-hmm. isn't as loud or as bone rattling as it has been previously over upon like the first day landing back in mm-hmm. in Canada. It's kind of being in awe of how we as human beings adapt, yeah. our ability to adapt, to move back into what we know as our quote day-to-day life mm-hmm. and still be with and still be aware of the presence or the ghosts of grief. But that sometimes she's not always as loud as we learn to navigate the paths or the lives that we're called to be in.
Mm, so true. Mm-hmm. And knowing that you are kind of always thinking about diasporic grief, whether you just got back, you know, a few weeks ago, or whether it's been years and you're sort of, you know, when, and this, I can speak for myself too, in that sense that we get kind of landlocked in our long winter times of the soul and of just the weather itself. Mm-hmm. But in thinking about knowing that grief is always so present for you, I would also wonder about the ways in which the nature of grief starts to change when we've had our souls filled up by being on the land and living with the stories and being able to dedicate yourself so fully to the imaginal work that occupies every day in its tiny little everyday ways.
Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating to me because even in saying like working with grief, for me, it's so multi-layered. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, it's not like I'm walking around always sad, but it's the reverence of when the emotions that grief invites through me to be able to sit with it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, grief is such an incredible teacher and an invitation to experience the joy and the magic and the glimmers of beauty in life, because mm-hmm. I've learned how to be in the company of grief when she's asking me to feel into the depths and the waters of loss or separation.
Yeah.
So it's that overwhelming, confusing dance between feeling many things at one time, grief being both the teacher or the invitation to dive into the depths of sorrow, mm-hmm. while also asking us to remember and experience in the present moment when beauty is there, whether it's, you know, a butterfly passing by my window, you know, sitting here while we're recording, or the beautiful simplicity of being in County Kerry and sitting in my little cottage kitchen with the doors wide open and mm-hmm. being able to see the ocean from a distance, but becoming mm-hmm. so enthralled and in love with a beautiful English robin who would come mm-hmm. to visit me throughout the day, would pop down and kind of peek at me and then fly away, you know? Oh. I think because how the different elements and the different ghosts of grief that I dance with has allowed me to sit in those moments of magic and glimmers to go, oh, to be so present in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what really struck me. So I first got the opportunity to hear this piece when you read it in our Authors Not community. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there's that opportunity to really sit and receive in a small group that I wish we could all receive all profound, you know, art and story in that way, because we can give that sense of attention. And what really struck me was you gave me access to grief that I hadn't wanted to, or wasn't able to, or just didn't personally need to access in the same way mm-hmm. in my own trip and my own travels, because we had such a contrast in our experience where you were in one place, largely alone, working on your own projects. Mm-hmm. And I had gone to the Bard Mythology Summer School with 30 and 25 other people, and then traveled around with a friend and was, you know, we had built in a little bit of quiet time every once in a while to remember that, but I was in a space of constant talking, movement, laughter. Mm-hmm. And so I was just so grateful to be given that space through your words and through your experience to remember that, oh, that's a dimension that I don't have access to in this moment if I'm just trying to rely on myself and how the bones and the mind and the voice of me moved through my own journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is just testament to why we create and why we have creative communities. But I just want to say thank you again for, mm-hmm. you know, and especially in your hugely expansive definition of what grief is, that it is mm-hmm. so much more than just sorrow. It's the pause and the presencing and the welcoming and the witnessing.
Mm-hmm. And the trusting the waters of it, because you've seen me even in just the last week and a half, 2 week time between sharing it, publishing it on Substack, and then you and I having the conversation now, that first reading in the group, that there's something to, and this is why I'm so passionate about storytelling and the medicine that rests in storytelling, specifically oral storytelling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because when we bring our voices to the story, to the feelings that are underneath, that's where the magic can happen. That's where the shifting and the alchemy that rests within our emotional mm-hmm. and spiritual body can happen when we use the sound of our voice. Mm-hmm. So in that first reading, hearing myself say lines like, please don't make me go, landed in such a way that I started to sob during the reading and had to find a way to find my breath mm-hmm. and still continue to read and be present in the moment, as well as honor the voice of the story that was coming through to today, being able to have a conversation with you and in a more, feeling more grounded in my body, and have it given it some time to just move through. And it doesn't always have to be a you know, a deep process of meditation and or sitting with it. And having ritual or space for the keen and the grief to move has been important to me. Mm-hmm. And has also been just as important to recognize I can still hold the space of the feeling of it. I can still be with the ghost of grief and support and nurture myself through the process without mm-hmm. falling into the depths of it. It yeah. helps to have your supports. It helps to have your team members. Mm-hmm. But you can't do it on your own.
Right.
But that has been a learning curve for me over the last decade.
Yeah.
But it has been such a teacher for me to be at this place today to lean into my dawn or the gift of storytelling mm-hmm. as medicine, not only for me, but then placing it out in the world and trusting that it will offer to others as it's called to.
Yes. Yes. And inherent in what you're saying too is, yes, it's the voice. And I also hear it in the sense of that permission we have to go back and dwell on our own creations, mm-hmm. right? And to look back. So because I was spending more time reading through your piece today before we sat down to talk, so what's that line? Please don't make me go, mm-hmm. right? I looked back. So I had the amazing good fortune of actually getting to go to Ireland both last October and then in July, which is, if you had told a version of myself a year ago that was going to be what would happen, I would have laughed at you. But, you know, sometimes the path opens and we decide to take it. Mm-hmm. But a piece that I had written, and I can't remember the actual name that I gave the piece in the end, and it, you know, it was a good, pretty successful Substack piece. But originally the working title was, I Just Need to Go. Mm. And then it just reminds me of, like, there's the limitations and the beauty of the English language and the resonance of it. As like, I was sitting in JFK finishing up a Substack going, I just needed to go. Because that last trip I booked with 2 weeks notice and just, we got on a plane and went. Mm. But then that other sense of, and you're highlighting from the other side of, please don't make me go. Mm. And it's, that's, they're the same words. And this is one of those like girl who cried epiphany gee whiz moments of like, how is it that we possibly create so much and convey so much in such a limited language that has exactly the same words that mean moving in two different directions mm-hmm. and having completely different sets of emotional everything behind mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe in some ways it's almost a silly story, but it's just that sense of, because of what you wrote, it reminded me that chance to go back, because we know that these journeys we have are also interwoven with one another. Mm-hmm. But then for any of us who are, you know, diasporic daughters as we are, every trip we take is related to the next one, that's woven to the next mm-hmm. one, and that we don't even know what gifts we're being given until we come home and start to do some of the synthesis. And I know there's some really important stuff in there for you. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that part.
Yeah. And hearing you say that, I hadn't thought about it, but the relationship between sitting on the ocean stones that last night that I had in Kerry, and that please don't make me go, not only in the sense of I don't want to leave the land, I could just stay here. Mm. That's a choice. But also that grief being connected to fear of, will I ever come back? Mm-hmm. Will I ever have that opportunity to come back to these lands that feel so a part of my essence, even though I wasn't born upon them? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I hadn't thought about it till this moment, but going how much that grief could be also in relationship to fear of, will I come back? And how that then threads through some of the stories in relationship to Irish emigration and being a daughter of the diaspora now, mm-hmm. because that's one of the larger projects that I'm working on, and that your author's not community holds space for, is this larger project called Te Hia Mo Airoha, of the land of my mothers, that asks the big question of, how do I find a sense of home on lands that aren't of my blood and bone? Mm-hmm. Being born on Turtle Island in the Ottawa Valley, that's where I landed.
Yeah.
But when my soul and my bones feel so deeply connected to a land that's across the sea, how do I find a sense of belonging being of two worlds?
Mm. And then in relation to that, I know you, something you had said to me in terms of what you, so you actually were on an artist's residency, right? You were in Kerry for 2 weeks and your intention was really to work and to go mm-hmm. into depth. And I know that it didn't necessarily go exactly the way you had expected, which I haven't had the opportunity yet to go in an artist residency, but I would have a sense that many, many people would say this is probably exactly the way the story tends to go. But I know it surprised you. Can you tell us a little bit about how that all went?
That's always an invitation that I'm always circling back around is we can go in with the best plan. I can go in with the best of expectations. And then I just got to let it go when the experience is in it. The first night, one of the directors sitting at the table was like, you might have this idea and it might take a different way. And even in that moment, I was still like, nope, I'm here with a mission. I'm here to work on my larger project. That's what I'm here to do. And it's like, nope, Sheila McGig had different plans. Looking back on it now, the story that came through was so powerful for me as a woman, but then also as an Irish Canadian storyteller, to feel that connection to the Great Mother, the essence of Ireland as a landscape and the spirit of the land being a place both of birth and death and rebirth, and how for me in that 2-week time sitting with Sheila Nagig's story that came through and her being on one of the stones at the Hill of Tara was an opportunity for me to really sit in my own body, sit in my body as a woman, and then ask the questions of who's telling our stories, who's telling the story of not only women, but when we look at Irish mythology, these like Queen Maeve and the sovereignty goddesses, like who's telling the stories and what are the stories we continue to repeat, and asking those questions, not only in service of the story itself, but then asking me as an artist in the same time going, how am I telling my own story in the ones that come through? So it was very layered, but what a beautiful place to kind of dive into the depths of where my practice is, where my creative nourishment is, and how it's beginning to shift and change and held in such a wise presence.
So as you describe it that way, it sounds absolutely inevitable that you went and worked on exactly what you always knew you always had to work on, of course. And I know you've said too that like in having come home, it became abundantly obvious if your main projects, the blood and bones of it is about diasporic grief, you have to write that in the place in which you are experiencing the diasporic grief, not when you're actually back with your feet and your hands in the soil of the mother. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. It's going to land in the last 12 hours of going, I only have this much time left. Mm-hmm. And that the piece that came through that I shared on Substack and with the listeners today genuinely landed on the last night when all the other artists, like I said, were at dinner and I knew I would have my alone time. I love my alone time when I'm traveling to be just on the land to listen. So I thought now's the time to go down to the water where I know I won't be interrupted. And I can just sit and listen. And I was sitting on those stones. And I kind of, initially I giggled to myself thinking, you know, people talk about grounding in the earth to take your socks and shoes off and feel the grass. And I'm the one who's like, no, let me get my feet on the stones. Anytime I've been near ocean water, it's like, my body needs to feel the weight of the stones. And sitting there and going, okay. And then the waves of grief and those lines, please don't make me go. Feeling it. And then all of a sudden having that vision of if the Great Mother emerged from the sea with the opportunity for me to remember fully the parts of my soul that know what it's like to not only call Ireland home, but the waters. The Atlantic waters connected to Ireland as home. Would I be able to fully receive my seal skin and dive back into the waters of her? And then the grief starts even more because it's like, I don't know what my answer would be if she emerged right now, right in front of me. Would I be able to give her an answer in the moment?
could I accept the mythic quest? Is mm-hmm. that mythic self that you court so actively mm-hmm. alive and real enough? And I say you, and I mean we, because I think mm-hmm. any of us who are in this have been, like, if we put ourselves in your shoes, can I believe enough in the mythic self when given a mythic quest to potentially say, yes, I would take it and leave it all behind? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, you made, I mean, we know the Selkie story well, you know, you made the Selkie question more real to me than it ever has been before. And you mm-hmm. made it into, and I love how in the piece you talked about your partner, you talked about love and your connection to your beautiful domestic life. Mm-hmm. But somehow I had always read the story at that level or received that story. And you gave it to us at this mythical connection to Mother Ireland level and made it into the great diasporic question. Because something you and I had talked about before we started recording is, you know, Ireland is not on the moon. Like, it's not impossible to uproot life and figure out a way. And whether it's that you get citizenship and can stay forever, you just find ways to get permanent enough residency. Like, it's possible. Mm-hmm. And it's also a great mythic quest sort of question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Can I, how do I live between worlds?
Mm-hmm.
And what a question to explore being a daughter of the Irish diaspora, not born on the lands that feel so deeply connected to a sense of, quote, home.
Mm. Well, I know you well enough to know you already do live between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it seems as if the question isn't not can I, but mm-hmm. it becomes those questions of, well, what other verbs are necessary here? Mm-hmm. You know, if we're going to swing the difference of, I have to go and please don't make me go, you know, can I live between worlds? Yes, of course you already do.
Yeah.
Is it a question of how to do it with more grace, more insight, more fluidity? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what starts to land with you when you live into that question.
It's interesting. In the moment, the first word that comes to mind is acceptance.
Mm. Ooh, that's some wise stuff. Difficult wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And even right now, I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm going to have to sit with that one for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But if I know in my bones, I'm of two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It's the question, like we said, is it a yes or no? You can only have your seal skin and have to leave the world that you know? Or can I have both?
Mm-hmm.
Does the ability to, maybe the seal skin was never taken from me. Maybe it's always been mine and I get to decide when I put it on.
Yeah.
I think that, and then that's, it's kind of really putting a spin on the traditional tale in of itself. But I feel as a woman living today in 2025, now's as good a time as ever to explore these questions and, you know, maybe the returning to the lands during opportunities, the gifts and the opportunities I have to travel there
mm-hmm.
is to A, remember that this is a part of me that's mm-hmm. sitting at on the ocean shore and having that visual, that memory of her coming out of the water, the great mother, and handing it to me. It's like, no, you are taking it. Now we just get to learn how we navigate it. And the acceptance comes from, yes, I am of two worlds. And now I just have to learn, relearn, remember, or intuit how I do that now.
So the beautiful riddle in the midst of this is, as you actively say, yes, it's possible to live in two worlds, mm-hmm. you also reject the binary that is skin or no skin. You mm-hmm. can have it or you can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been such a beautiful, busy, creative summer for both of us. And I know both mm-hmm. of us are a couple steps behind and probably hearing each other's stuff as a problem that I think every single listener in this world who says there's too many wonderful things and I wish I had more space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you know that I had almost exactly the same conversation about our relationship with the skin, with this, our seal skin, with Tracy Chipman, who invited me on her podcast through Substack, A Year in a Day. She told the Selkie story, and I got into an unexpected sort of conversation around the sense of, I think sometimes I know where my seal skin is in the house, and sometimes I move it to different rooms because I limit myself in terms of what is possible. Mm-hmm. And the fact that unbeknownst to one another, we were having exactly the same conversations in these spirals of things like, yes, of course, you and I get to spend some time together and we share a lot of common lore. I mean, mm-hmm. all the way down to our love of the Maritimes and sitting at the mm-hmm. Atlantic from the other side. Mm-hmm. But what if we're at a bigger collective moment mm-hmm. of really questioning this story we've received from the Selkie, which has meant so much to generations and beyond of women and all people who have been in situations of saying, but you made me choose. I had to sacrifice a part of myself in order to move into society and into having this kind of love that this mm-hmm. traditional Selkie story offers us. Mm-hmm. And what if we are collectively moving into the binaries are being broken down because they were always false. Mm-hmm. And when you live in two worlds, and you can accept that truth, so much more becomes possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It definitely feels like there's something in the waters of that, in the sense that I even had that reminder shortly landing back in Ottawa of how the beautiful web, or like the visual that another wonderful soul has brought to my mind. And now I just keep coming back to it. The mycelia that connects all of us in this, not only the creative realm, but the world at which all of us are connected to as souls. Mm-hmm. These stories, these mythic stories, carry such remembrance and teachings that they're making themselves more present, because mm-hmm. you and I didn't have a conversation prior to that author's not gathering that you had no idea I was bringing a tale about a Selkie story. And right. just as I was working on that piece, preparing for that Monday night call, the wonderful Jennifer Murphy shared a piece on her Substack mm-hmm. that was an exploration of the mythic ancestor, or the folkloric ancestor of the Selkie. And I went, oh my gosh. What a to be in awe of, or the word in itself in its true meaning, how awesome. Mm-hmm. What a gift to be in a moment as a creative, as an artist, to trust where my instincts are going, to trust the imbus of the stories that are coming through. And then for it to be affirmed in ways that we don't realize, that we couldn't have ever imagined, but for somebody else's Substack to land in my inbox going, you're tapping into something that's greater than you realize mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. so awe-inspiring. And it's those moments where I go, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful to have met the wonderful souls that I have along this path, like yourself, like Jennifer, who are not only teaching me and bringing me back to this knowledge and these stories that I've longed for and now are becoming a part of my own foundation, mm-hmm. but just being the reflection, the mirrors of, you're in the right spot. Yeah. You're in the right spot. Keep going, because this is greater than you realize.
Yes. Oh my God. The levels of synchronicities in that, of course, Jen Murphy was one of our very first guests. I think she was actually the first Irish storyteller I got to have on the show. And her first story that she told in season one of the Not Work Storytelling was her Selkie story. Because, of course,
yeah, right,
Jen does a lot of other things besides just tell Selkie stories. But apparently, these mm-hmm. are all the things that are coming together. Mm-hmm. And I want to end us, though, at that place where you said about being at exactly the right spot. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the greatest thing to offer to mm-hmm. yourself, to myself, to any of us who are yearning for a space that's thousands of miles away, mm-hmm. is trusting that it's okay, mm-hmm. more than okay, mm-hmm. to be where we are, mm-hmm. The connections abound. The stories hold us. The land isn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. She will call us back. Mm-hmm. We will be able to answer. Mm-hmm. And we will be able to make another choice. Mm-hmm. When it's time to depart, when it's time to arrive.
Yep.
Oh, well, Erica, wow. Thank you for this doorway opened up with grief that then takes us to the heart of everything that matters most. And that in that acknowledgement of loss, there's so much that's found. Mm-hmm.
My pleasure. We just agree.
Grand amour, sister, as they say. Big love. I'm so grateful to share this journey with you. Maybe next time we could try to go to Ireland together, opposed to separately together.
Yes.
It could happen.
Plant those seeds. Put them in the water.
Planting seeds in the waters. Like, there's another prompt, right? What does it mean to plant seeds in the water? Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm excited by that one already. And I'm always excited to sit down and have a chance to talk with you. So I can't wait to see what story you'll bring to us next as we move from our Lunasa time closer to the equinox and Samhain. I know you've got a lot of really fabulous, cooler, darker weather stories up those sleeves of yours. And I can't wait to see what you'll share with us next.
I'm so grateful. There's always stories. There's a few spirits of stories hanging out in the wings, ready to go, the theater wings. So I'm excited too.
Perfect. All right. We'll see you soon. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform. And do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.